Hello, and welcome to the latest recording of Here and Now, the Dawlish and Tynmouth area talking newspaper. Today is Friday, the 12th of January, and we are the Green Team. My name is Gwen Wedden, and I'm joined by some of the other members of our team, Graham, Lynn, and Mike. Unfortunately, Chris can't be with us this morning, so I will be reading some articles in her place. And now moving on to the headline on the Dawlish Gazette. Take the long way home. Walkers in Dawlish are up in arms as part of the seawall is closed at the same time as an adjacent footpath. Network Rail has revealed that a section of the seawall, damaged by storms several months ago, will not reopen until June, while repair work is carried out. But at the same time, a footpath along Ladies Mile, which could be used as an alternative route to the seawall, is also being closed by Devon County Council. Network Rail says the damage to the sections of the seawall affected was compounded by two more recent storms. But they hope work on the footpath should only take about 4 weeks, and it will be open as soon as possible. A spokesman for Network Rail said, owing to damage caused to the old sea wall by Storm Ciarán in November, the sections of footpath on the wall between Coast Guard's Breakwater and Red Rock Langston at Dawlish and Smuggler's Cove at Holcombe and Spray Point towards Tynmouth were immediately closed for repairs. The repair work on the Tynmouth side was completed in December, with the walkway reopening just before Christmas. However, the Dawlish section remains closed as the site poses more of a challenge. Work has been delayed by further bad weather, including Storm Gerrit and last week's Storm Henk, which has caused further damage to the wall. In addition, materials can only be brought to site by track, using specialist vehicles while trains aren't running on Saturday nights. We're working to get the footpath open as soon as possible and have approximately 4 weeks of work to carry out. However, progress will depend on the weather and tides. We'd like to remind the community that the footpath remains closed for everyone's safety until the repairs are complete. The closure notice in place on the footpath states 6 months due to the public rights of way closures being granted for either 3 weeks or 6 months. But it is understood the work is not expected to take 6 months, but it may take slightly longer than 4 weeks, as work will be carried out around the weather and the tides. Path users have complained that the footpath should only be closed when the repairs take place. The section of footpath affected is popular for dog walkers, joggers, swimmers and tourists heading between Dawlish and the Warren. Storm damage to the seawall has affected the edging stones, which were dislodged, and others removed, and part of the walkway surface has also been damaged. Meanwhile, engineers were working over the festive period to continue the latest phase of the resilience project along the railway line between Dawlish and Holcombe. The team worked around the clock over Christmas to drill soil nails into the cliffs to reduce the risk of material falling onto the track. The work is part of the ongoing multi-million pound project to protect the vulnerable coastal rail link. Network Rail's South West Rail Resilience Programme is moving into its final phases after years of work, including the innovative seawall at Dawlish and the new overbridge and lift at the station. This cliff work part of the scheme, which began in the summer, will carry on in 2024. A Network Rail spokesman said, "Thank you to our neighbours for your patience."
Hello, I'm Graham, and my Tynmouth headline is, "No unisex, please, we're British." New unisex changing facilities at a Tynbridge leisure centre could put women and girls at risk, it has been claimed. Tynbridge Council plans to spend £3.7 million doing up the tired Broadmeadow Centre at Tynmouth, slashing its cardboard emissions and giving it a new frontage and reception area, studio spaces, changing facilities and a bigger gym. While some small single-sex changing rooms will be retained, there will be large village-style unisex changing areas with individual lockable shower cubicles. Supporters say they are more flexible and better for families and people who need carers. But opponents say trans women, older women, and those of Muslim, Hindu, and Orthodox Jewish faiths will be discouraged from using the leisure centre, and some will feel intimidated. Councillor Andrew McGregor, of South Devon Alliance Independent Bishops Tainton, told a meeting of the Tonbridge Executive Committee, "I don't believe these plans are inclusive or progressive. They represent a step backwards for women and girls, whose right to have single-sex spaces is hard won." He said he felt the revamp plans had been dealt with too quickly by the council last year to make sure it did not miss out on the £300,000 in external funding. He added, "I don't believe this council has taken enough care to examine all the impacts that may occur." He cited a recent case in Wales where a predator had targeted a 15-year-old girl in a village-style changing area and filmed her on his phone while she was changing. To shouts of support from the public gallery, he said, "These changing rooms represent a far higher risk than single-sex facilities, and they may cause women and girls to self-exclude or traumatise those who have suffered from sexual abuse. I don't think we have done this properly. I'm not saying we shouldn't have village-style changing available for families, but we should also have large single-sex facilities, particularly for women and girls, because they are the ones who are at risk. It's logical, it's sensible, it's rational, and it's guided by science and research." A public consultation on the Broadmeadow revamp remains open until Friday, the 19th of January, and councillors agreed to consider any amendments to the plans after the consultation ends.
Weed Hot Foam Party takes over from Chemical Killers. Newton Abbott will be going pesticide-free following a decision by town councillors. Their vote in favour of banning the chemicals means that an eco-friendly, state-of-the-art hot foam machine will now be used for weeding. In addition, the council will consider reduced mowing and plant removal to allow wildflowers to flourish and provide a greater nectar resource for bees and other pollinators. The authority is also working with Green Futures Newton Abbott, Tonbridge District Council and Suez, S-U-E-Z, Recycling and Recovering UK to pilot the pesticide-free Bradley Initiative, encouraging the use of insect-friendly alternatives in gardens and homes. A pesticide amnesty will be held later this year with curbside collection services across Bradley Ward for residents to dispose of unwanted weed killers and similar products. Mayor Councillor David Corney Walker, an experienced beekeeper, said, "I am delighted our town council has voted to adopt this new, much greener approach. Across the UK and globally, we have been experiencing a concerning decline in pollinating insects over the last 50 years or so. I'm told that in parts of the world, the populations of some insects has plummeted by 98% since the 1970s. And across the UK, there's been declines of between 45 to 91% in butterfly populations, and an average of 11 bee species have been lost per square kilometre. Newton Abbott Town Council is now doing its bit to help reverse this worrying decline, and I'd encourage all households to follow suit." Andrew Rotherley, Green Futures Newton Abbott coordinator, said, "Pollinators are essential for maintaining the fertility of most plant species across our ecosystem and are estimated to be needed for at least 75% of global crop production. One of the main causes of pollinator decline across the UK and the rest of the world is the increasing use of pesticides. I welcome the Town Council's decision to be part of the solution. Choral Society prepares for Carl Jenkins tribute concert. Following their Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat concert in May of last year, Teen Choral Society presented an uplifting performance of a varied programme of both traditional and more unusual Christmas pieces last month. The audience themselves contributed immensely to the evening's atmosphere at St James's in Tynmouth by their enthusiastic singing of well-loved carols, culminating in an inspiring performance of O Come All Ye Faithful. The research of music director David Bowles had led him to a work by Ariel Ramirez that uses rhythms and melodies of rural Latin America in telling the Christmas story Navidad Nuestra, Our Nativity. The story was told in six movements, some joyous, some wondrous, but eventually leading to a vivid evocation of the steadfast flight from the butchering Herod. The Society's next concert, in May, will in part be a tribute to the really significant composer Carl Jenkins in his 80th year. The Society will be singing his motets, a set of intimate and spiritually uplifting choral works that feature new works but also movements from his most popular work, including The Armed Man, his Requiem, Ademus, and The Peacemakers. And after the success of May 2023, we will be returning to the music of Andrew Lloyd Webber, together with the pithy lyrics of Tim Rice in a suite of songs from Phantom of the Opera. Pianist Carol Massey is an inspiring accompanist who also brings a great sense of humour to our rehearsals. Anyone thinking of joining the Society would be warmly welcomed and are invited to come along and see if it's what you're looking for. There are no auditions and rehearsals take place at 7:15 p.m. on Wednesdays at St James, Tynmouth. For more details, contact Nigel Berryman on 01626 773286.
Bike stolen from Team GB Triathlete. Specialised triathlon bikes worth in the region of £20,000 have been stolen from a Tynmouth property in what is thought to be a targeted burglary. The incident took place overnight on Friday, December the 15th through to Saturday, December the 16th at an address on Yannon Drive. The bikes were secured against the wall of the garage, the lock for which was prized open by thieves who then absconded with bikes in hand. Owner Donald Brooks, 46, believes it was a targeted theft, given that other items in the garage, including other bikes, were not stolen. "I think it was a targeted attack," Donald said. "We live in a quiet cul-de-sac. There aren't reports of burglaries, but they have come into my garage, forced it open, and taken the higher value bikes. They left the other bikes," he added. The bikes were on the wall, chained up to an anchor point, with a dust sheet over them. "They knew what they were after," Donald said. "It is very off-putting how they have worked out where they are and what they need to steal them. Have they followed me? Have they seen me riding my bike? Was it from my social media?" Donald is not feeling optimistic about his bikes being recovered. "I must admit, I am not holding out much hope," Donald said. "If the police find them, that would be fantastic. But I'm on the pessimistic side that they have gone. I don't think I will ever see them again." Donald, who's been a triathlete since 2014, is set to compete in the Ironman World Championships in Hawaii later in the year, having already completed several in the past. "Off the back of the 2012 Olympics, I got into cycling more, had a go at a triathlon. I really liked it and went from there, Donald said. I have done very well, he added. I race with Team GB age group team. I first got in the GB team in 2015, and then I've been on the team on and off since then. And there are two photographs accompanying this. One shows Donald crossing the finishing line at one of the Iron World Championships. Looks a rather painful little episode there. And photographs of the two bicycles that have gone missing. And they really do look, to me, very expensive items.
Commission warns of drastic shortage of affordable housing. A drastic shortage of affordable housing is having severe consequences on Devon's economy as families increasingly struggle to find places to live. The Devon Housing Commission, which is made up of Devon's 11 local authorities and supported by the University of Exeter, has written to Lord Richard Benyon, Minister for Rural Affairs, to urge faster action on delivering more affordable homes for the county. The Commission told Lord Benyon that the average home in Devon costs more than 10 times the average income, rising to 28 times in some rural areas. The Commission wants the government to ensure more homes are made available for local people by deploying the DEFRA Rural Housing Enablers policy in Devon. The scheme was boosted last year with £2.5 million of funding to help the supply of new affordable housing by identifying development opportunities, supporting site owners and community representatives to navigate the planning system, and securing the support of local communities for developments. The majority of Devon's local authorities are classed as predominantly rural, and the percentage of people in the county who live in a settlement of fewer than 10,000 people is twice that of England as a whole. Furthermore, the delivering of affordable rural homes in Devon has declined since the loss of the previous rural housing enabling service, from more than 200 homes in 2017 to 2018 to now only 91 4 years later. Council tax safety net to remain in place. Working age people in Teignbridge who need help with their council tax will continue to get support from the local council after members voted unanimously to keep a safety net in place. Teignbridge Council's Executive Committee pledged more than £840,000 to a council tax relief scheme for the coming year. That is just over 8% of the total cost, with the rest coming from Devon County Council and the Police and Fire Services. The committee also agreed to increase the district's share of the council tax by 2.99%, or around 11 pence per household per week. Deputy Council Leader Richard Keeling said, "The government has not given us enough this year to cover the cost of inflation. But we continue to deliver important services. We need to make some difficult decisions, including a small rise in council tax." Average Band D properties in Teignbridge currently pay £2,279.30 per year, with just 8% of that total, £190.71, going to the District Council. The council says rising costs and falling income mean it has to increase bills to pay for core services such as waste and recycling, street cleaning, planning, licensing, car parking, environmental health, homelessness and election organisation. Councillor Keeling continued, "We are working hard to deliver quality council services against a backdrop of local government budget cuts and increased costs. Our core funding from government has reduced significantly. The council tax relief scheme provides household up to 100% off their bills. Teignbridge remains committed to helping our most financially vulnerable households," said Councillor Keeling. "Now is not the time to be cutting support, and we need to step up. This is a safety net that we strongly believe needs to be in place. Most councils are now coming round to that way of thinking. A final decision on budgets for the next financial year will be made in March. Local residents and businesses are encouraged to make comments in a survey on the council website, which runs until noon on Friday, February the 2nd.
Care Home donates to HITS Food Bank. A Tynmouth Care Home's festive jumper event proved to be a hit with a local food bank charity. Glendale Court's special event saw much more foodstuffs donated to the Food Bank HITS, HITS. Chairman of HITS trustee, David Cox, said, "A big thank you to the staff at Glendale Court Care Home, who donated a lot of food to HITS Food Bank." It's a very short article there, but it's made up by there are seven people in the photograph here, all looking very, very happy indeed, showing various items that have been donated to the HITS.
Work starts on Fire Service Improvement Programme. Devon and Somerset Fire and Rescue Service has started work on a changed programme to enable it to meet significant financial challenges next year and in future years. The service must find savings of £3 million to set a balanced budget for the next financial year of 2024-25. Further savings will need to be found in the following 3 to 4 years. To meet these financial challenges, the service has developed a target operating model to identify how it could become more efficient while keeping people safe in emergencies. Chief Fire Officer Gavin Ellis said, "Everybody will be fully aware of the impact of the global economic crisis and the cost of living crisis, unfunded pay awards, as well as a rise in interest rates, which has had such an impact on our utilities and our resources. We need to invest in those areas that are important, such as our estates and firefighter training, and work with our staff to drive through these efficiencies. Areas that will be reviewed include whole-time firefighter shift patterns, on-call firefighter pay for availability system, attendance at unwanted fire signals, and specialist rescue capability." Senior officers presented members of Devon and Somerset Fire and Rescue Authority with the proposals for changes to the service to meet the financial deficit next year and in the following years at a recent meeting. Members unanimously endorsed the planned areas for change, and they will then be included in the revenue budget proposals for 2024-25.
Study shows Devon and Cornwall Police one of the worst forces for response times. Devon and Cornwall Police are among the worst UK police forces for response times, a study revealed. The study, conducted by Radaris, reveals the UK police forces answering phone calls the quickest and the slowest, and Devon and Cornwall Police were among the worst. Research conducted by the search engine analyses the MOT recent data from the month of November 2023 to determine how long forces take to answer emergency calls. Devon and Cornwall Police came in 39th out of the 45 constabularies included in the study. Out of a total of 22,729 calls, 80.1% were answered in less than 10 seconds. One of the force's closest neighbours, Dorset Police, were the slowest for answering 999 calls, with 75.1% of a total of 9,880 calls being answered in less than 10 seconds. Greater Manchester Police had the quickest 999 response rate, with 41,786 out of 44,491 calls answered under 10 seconds.
Tynmouth and District U3A. Tynmouth and District U3A held a special coffee morning at Tynmouth Rugby Club for the 50 new members who had joined since June. Peter Hayes, publicity officer, explained, "The current membership total now stands at 445. Not a bad effort in less than 4 years from a standing start." Pam Hayes, new group facilitator, gave an outline to the new members of the numerous activities on offer, as well as other interesting ideas in the pipeline. They include yummies for members simply wanting to meet up for breakfast, lunch or dinner, table tennis or a park walk, as opposed to the more strenuous Saturday park run along Tynmouth seafront. Well over 30 new members attended together, with an impressive number of group leaders turning up to add their support. On the musical theme, David Headworthy promoted his ukulele group, and Alison Thomas gave a plug for her ever-popular Tin Tunesmiths team. With well over 50 different activities on offer, there has never been a better time to join U3A. Go to www.tynmouthu3a.org.uk to find out more. Members also enjoyed a trip to see Powderham Castle's Christmas lights display. And I have in front of me a photograph here, which really does look a very attractive display. And amongst the people there attending there is the chairman, Pauline Dean.
Health Exhibition Art Exhibition, apologies, Health Centre Art Exhibition examines the way of the tree. Artist Lucy Patrick is exhibiting her latest body of work at Moreton Hampstead Health Centre, in which she is aiming to entertain, distract and engage patients while they wait to see a doctor. The exhibition, entitled The Way of the Tree, opens on January the 15th. She said, underlying the work is a serious message about the environment and human interaction with nature, whilst also encouraging people to take note of the different sorts of trees that surround them. She uses a variety of media such as oil paint, collage, photographs, even rubbings from the plants that she finds near the trees that have inspired her work. Her interest in mapping and the relationships between people and places led her to draw a spiral on a map of her hometown of Moreton Hampstead and to set out to find 27 trees that are located on this spiral. She said that this has been a real process of discovery. I have found trees nearby that I had previously not known existed, even though we've lived in the town for nearly a quarter of a century. The aim of this show is to share with viewers the method of revealing the unfamiliar within a familiar setting. Since graduating in combined arts, Lucy has regularly exhibited her work throughout the Southwest, in London and Birmingham. Some of her community artwork is currently being exhibited in Breton, Brittany. Lucy will be encouraging visitors to the show to think about their favourite tree in the town and locating it on a displayed map. They will also have the opportunity to purchase the work through Greenhill Arts. A percentage of the proceeds from the sale of her work will go to the local charity St. Petrox, supporting people experiencing homelessness, and local tree planting charity More Trees.
Now, we have quite a few obituaries this week, starting with Stuart Burns, who passed away peacefully at Torbay Hospital on December the 19th, aged 76. A celebration of his life will take place at Torquay Crematorium on January the 19th at 3:30. William Bill Brumpton passed away peacefully at Torbay Hospital on December the 19th, aged 81 years. And his life service will take place at Torquay Crematorium on Friday, January the 26th at 15:30. Eric England passed away peacefully at age 93 on the 17th of December. His funeral will take place on Thursday the 18th of January at St. Gregory's Church, Dawlish. Vera Joan Ebden passed away peacefully at Summer Court Residential Home on the 25th of December, aged 103. And her service will take place at Dawlish Cemetery Chapel at 11 a.m. on Thursday the 23rd of January, followed by a family burial. All of those details can be got from J.H. Way Funeral Service in Dawlish. Barbara Slee. The family are sad to announce that Barb passed away on January the 1st, 2024, aged 69. A celebration of her life will take place at St. Peter's Chapel, Exeter and Devon Crematorium on Wednesday, January the 24th at 12:30. Barbara Peggy Selly passed away peacefully at home on the 27th of December, aged 93. The service will be at St. James Church on Thursday, the 25th of January at 1 p.m. Peter Frank Taylor passed away peacefully at Parkwood House Nursing Home, Plymouth, on the 24th of November, 2023, aged 88. His funeral service will take place on Thursday, the 18th of January at 1:30 p.m. at St. Gregory's Church, Dawlish. And Dot Spring, who sadly passed away on the 16th of December, her service will be held at St. Gregory's Church, Dawlish, on Friday the 19th at 12 noon. And all of those people also, details from J.H. Way Funeral Service. And now moving on to events that are up and coming. Tuesday, the 16th of January, Dawlish Community Transport are going to Ullacombe Farm. Wednesday, the 17th of January, Holcombe Garden Society meet at 2:30, when the speaker, Paul Rendell, will be speaking about plants, Dartmoor wild plants. Saturday, the 20th, Exminster Gardening Club's annual dinner at the Victory Hall. Tickets are £25. And Tuesday, the 23rd of January, Dawlish Community Transport are going to Nutwell Lodge in Limpstone for lunch. And if you wish to go on either of the Dawlish Community Transport excursions, the number to ring is 01626 888777. Festive Concert raises funds. More than £400 has been raised for a local cancer charity following a Christmas concert last month. The Sheldon Singers, directed by Tim Crompton and accompanied by organist Andrew Millington, presented a varied programme of festive music in St. Peter's Church in December. After the concert, a retiring collection raised £440 for Sheldon's Cancer Research UK branch. Jill Willis from the charity said, "Thank you so much for donating this money to Sheldon and District Branch of Cancer Research UK. It was a fantastic concert and got us all into the Christmas spirit." Sheldon Singers rehearsals, which take place in St. Peter's Church, resume today. When the singers start rehearsals for Mozart's Requiem and Pergolesi's Magnificat. New singers are always made very welcome, and anyone interested in joining can email sheldonsingers@gmail.com.
Visitor numbers down on Dartmoor. The cost of living crisis and the after effects of the pandemic caused a drop in the number of visitors to Dartmoor in 2023, a new report reveals. Wet summer weather also kept visitors away, but those who did come to the moor made the most of the national park's undercover attractions. Footfall in the moor's visitor centres went up by more than 30%. A report to a meeting of the Dartmoor National Park Authority later this week also highlights the biggest story on the moors in 2023, the Court of Appeal ruling in July, which saw the authority overturn an earlier ruling against backpacking camping on the moor. Landowner Anthony Dole had succeeded in persuading the High Court to rule against wild camping, but the DNPA objected and won an appeal. An article on the subject of the authority's social media channels reached more than 500,000 people. The biggest increase in footfall was at the Postbridge Visitor Centre in May, where an increase in coach visits boosted numbers by 59% compared to the previous year. In September, the Princetown Visitor Centre hosted the Sherlock Holmes Society of London. In total, the centres at Postbridge, Princetown and Haytor welcomed nearly 115,000 people between the beginning of April and the end of September.
Centenary flag flies high. Teignmouth Golf Club launched their hotly anticipated centenary year with a shotgun scramble and a flag raising on Saturday. Members turned out to the Hilltop Club in their scores to celebrate a historic moment as the special centenary flag was hoisted by Teignmouth Mayor Joan Atkins, four-year-old Sophie Stenner Evans and longest-serving member of the club, Richard Wilson. The club will not officially turn 100 years old until May the 17th, but a specially curated committee have put together an exciting year of tournaments and celebrations for the members to enjoy. Chairman of the Centenary Committee, Ian Snell, said, "It came as an unexpected pleasure to lead the committee. I've done something very similar in the South East before and was delighted to take it on. This is a start to a very, very busy year. We've been very lucky with the weather and it has made a great beginning for us." The Teignmouth course was designed back in 1924 by legendary golf course architect Dr. Alistair Mackenzie, who notably is responsible for creating the Augusta National Golf Club in California, which has since become the home of the Masters Tournament, one of the most prestigious competitions in professional golf. Before Teignmouth's members settled into the clubhouse for lunch on Saturday, a mixed-drawn shotgun scramble was played in the near-zero temperatures, and the winning team were presented with a bespoke centenary glassware from Dartington Crystal by men's captain Matt Thorne. Everything bought for the centenary celebrations has been sourced through local businesses. And Terry Kennard, vice chair of the centenary committee, said, "You get so much out of sport by playing, and it's lovely to be able to put something back into the club and into the sport for other people to enjoy. In every section, the juniors, the seniors, the ladies, the men and the social members, there is something for everybody here this year." This article is accompanied by some lovely photographs of the mayor raising the flag on what looks like a little bit of a sunny but very windy day. Lady Mayor of Teignmouth Joan Atkins and four-year-old Sophie Stenner Evans and Richard Wilson are all pulling the flag aloft for the club.
Now on to rugby. Sloppy teens give Welly the boot. Prior to the match, many of the spectators enjoyed a sumptuous lunch as part of the first event in Teignmouth Rugby Club's anniversary year, and their day was made complete by only their second win since October. It was clear to anyone who was present at the first game between Teignmouth and Wellington back in September that Welly were a much-changed side. But then so were the teens. On this occasion, the roles were reversed, as the home side was able to field a near full-strength team, and it was Welly who were short of some of their better players. The Somerset side have been on a poor run since that September game, and after this bonus point victory, the teens find themselves just 1 point behind them in the league table. It would be churlish to criticise following such a large victory, but the margin could have been much bigger had the home side not once again been guilty of some sloppy tackling and a lack of discipline in the first half. In general, head coach Colin Stewart was delighted with his side's performance, especially in the second half. Despite the defensive frailties before half-time, the Teignmouth had racked up a bonus point before the interval. The sides turned around with the home side leading 29-20. Although the teens never looked in danger of surrendering their lead in the second half, especially after Dan Allison's early try, Welly gave themselves a chance of a comeback with their own bonus point try from hooker Toby Redwood on the hour. But the visitors tired in the final quarter, and tries from wingers Jack Bond and Will Sowden allowed the home side to break the half century for the first time this year. Coach Stewart is a bit of a perfectionist, and so could not help pointing out that two or three of Welly's tries could have been prevented by more effective defence, and that will need to be addressed before next Saturday's match at Topsham.
Sharples share glee as pair turn up together. Paul and Shaz Sharples successfully completed their final marathons of 2023, undaunted by blustery conditions, each hitting the magnificent magical 100 marathon mark at Exmouth. On day 3 of the Bell Challenge, December the 31st was an epic day for the Sharples, coping with wind and rain. Fellow competitors included many Timbridge trotters running a variety of distances. Their son running his first marathon and daughter completing 10 kilometres. The 3.3-mile out-and-back course meant preservation was essential to keep going. After finishing in 5 hours, 23 minutes and 34 seconds, they were presented with the elusive 100 Marathon Club medal and shirt sought after by many runners. The journey to 100 has taken time. It started with Shaz's London Marathon in 2005 for Children's Hospice Southwest. Paul started with that 10th running of the Torbay Marathon in 1990. They met competing at the infamous hilly Dartmoor Discovery Ultra Marathon in 2016 and have continued to run most of the marathons together. Shaz achieved her 50th marathon in April 2017 at the Plym Trail Race, and Paul got to 50 at the Dartmoor Discovery in 2019. And there is a photograph of two very, very happy people showing their medals that they've won over the last few years, and also having a bottle of champagne to go with their successes.
And with other news, tribute to Triumph's silent service heroes. Submariners past and present mustered in Newton Abbot last Sunday to remember those lost at sea, and in particular the crew of the Royal Navy wartime submarine HMS Triumph. The memorial service at St Paul's Church and a subsequent wreath laying was organised by the town's Royal British Legion branch, who adopted the current HMS Triumph, a Trafalgar-class nuclear-powered hunter-killer submarine, several years ago. HMS Triumph was laid down by Vickers at Barrow-in-Furness and launched in 1938. The boat was lost in transit in 1942 with a crew of 64, and its fate was unknown until the sunken boat was rediscovered in June last year. She was used for covert operations such as landing agents in German-occupied areas, said Newton Abbott, Royal British Legion's Vice Chairman David Carr. In December 1941, she undertook one such mission in which she successfully landed agents in Antipathos, Greece, on December the 30th. She failed to pick up the agents as scheduled on January the 9th and was lost probably to a collision with a mine. All 64 crew were lost. In June 2023, Greek researchers discovered the lost submarine in the Aegean Sea at the depth of 203 metres. She rests on the seabed of the open sea with an 8-degree starboard list. The lowered periscopes and sealed hatches testify that the Triumph was in a deep dive during its last moments. The diving planes and the rudder are in a straight position, indicating that it was at a steady depth. When we heard about news of the discovery, the committee pledged to honour those lost, continued Dave. This was especially apt, as the present HMS Triumph, our adopted boat, was awarded the Freedom of Newton Abbott in 2019. A freedom they exercised last April with a parade with fixed bayonets through the town streets. The well-attended service was taken by Reverend Gareth Regan and was attended by some of the crew of the current HMS Triumph, members of the Submariners Association, the Royal British Legion, with the county chair in attendance, as well as officers from the Newton Abbott branch Royal Naval Association, with town councillors and other military associations. The service included readings by Lieutenant Peter Reynolds of HMS Triumph and Councillor Louise Cook. A brief history of the boat was given by Brian Hall, MBE of the Submariners Association, and prior to the last post being sounded, Ian Hurst read a roll call of those lost in the sinking. Following the church service, wreaths were laid at the Town War Memorial and led by a representative of HMS Triumph. And there's some wonderful photographs that accompany this article, with the men in full dress parade laying the wreaths at the town's war memorial in Newton Abbot, and the lowering of the standards on a very poignant day.
Sweet things were made of these. You've got to have a laugh. That was the mantra adhered to by Margaret Sanders, who, having helped run a Newton Abbot sweet shop for nearly 50 years, passed away at the age of 93. A familiar face to those living in the town, Margaret, with husband Stan by her side, ran Sanders Tobacconist and Confectioners for several decades. Starting out at premises in Bank Street at the beginning of the 1970s, the sweet shop quickly became a beloved and much frequented by those living in and around Newton Abbot. Born above the family sweet shop in Queen Street in August of 1930, the youngest child of Victor and Ellen Pollard, Margaret worked in the family business serving sweets and ice cream from an early age. Margaret met Stan, who was from Kingstainton, through mutual friends, the pair forming a Skittles team together, the Falcons. The couple were married at St. Paul's Church on June 30, 1951, and they had four children together, Marilyn, Janet, Merv and Julie. Margaret and Stan were happily married for 49 years before Stan passed away in 1999 after a long illness. Margaret continued to run Sanders for years after Stan's passing, working at the shop alongside daughter Julie until it ceased trading in 2019. She received the honour of the Freedom of the Town in 2018 for her services as a retailer, which was something she was incredibly proud of. Margaret had a fond love of ballroom and sequence dancing. Taking up this passion after Stan passed away, she danced until she broke her hip and her wrist in November of 2019. Margaret, who passed away in November, is survived by her four children, 9 grandchildren, 19 great-grandchildren, and 1 great-great-grandchild, as well as several step-grandchildren.
Grand donation to Cypress Canine Charity. The owner of Signature Hair and Beauty in Dawlish, Chrissy Marks, has raised £1,000 for a pair of Cypress-based animal rescue charities. I support many animal charities, including one special charity, Saving Pound Dog Cypress, where I got one of my dogs from nearly 3 years ago, and another, Cypress Dog Rescue, which also does amazing work, Chrissy said. Chrissy's business donated 50p per customer who used her salon during the weeks leading up to Christmas, and she also ran a raffle. The fundraiser finished on Christmas Eve, and we managed to raise an amazing £966.81. My husband and I rounded it up to £1,000, Chrissy said. Lansdowne manager Andy Barton donated £100 and was therefore asked by Chrissy to announce the raffle draw. I will continue to do all I can to help raise more money in the future, and I am very grateful to all who donated, Chrissy said.
And that brings us to the end of our recording for this week. As always, if you have any comments or suggestions, you can contact us on 07 376 147 374. Your readers this week were Lynn, Graham and myself. Our producer is Mike. The copying and dispatching is a team effort. So from all of us here in the studio, We really hope that 2024 will be kind to you and your families. And until next time from us, it's goodbye.
Bye.